Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast with NBA shooting coach Dave Love and your host, Matt Robertson. Exploring the cutting edge of evidence-based shooting development in basketball today. From shooting form to skill acquisition to shot metrics. This is the Coach Dave Love Podcast.
Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Robertson. I've got with me Dave Love and Bryce Simon. What's going on today, fellas?
Not much, Dave. I'm excited to be here.
Man, Bryce, you're one of these guys that, like, this is our third conversation we've ever had. And, like, you're already a dude I really like. And after the first conversation, I was like, that conversation needs to be a podcast. I have to get Bryce on here. And, like, already we've been chatting off air for 2 minutes, and I'm fired up about what this might be. So thanks for being here.
Yeah. So. Real quick, Matt, like, Dave is right. I called and connected with Dave over something kind of random, and the conversation just kept going and going. I'm like, I'm taking up this guy's time. I know he's got more important things to do. The funny thing is, which you don't know, Dave, and you know, everybody listening to this will find out, I'm actually a teacher. And I was in the middle of class, so hopefully I don't get fired now that I say this. I was trying to, like, keep control of my class and not let you hear the announcements over the intercom and stuff like that as we were talking. And so I was kind of keeping that from you again. That was all going on. And I felt bad because I left the conversation kind of quickly. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just left Dave Love, like, kind of on a quick note, like, that's so embarrassing. So Dave didn't know any of this until right now. So I love getting this reaction.
I need to unpack this. There's a lot here. First of all, I was not aware that you left quickly. I felt like we left it appropriately. So okay, give that a second thought. In my recollection, we spoke for 20 to 25 minutes, didn't we? How long?
Yeah. So it was actually, it was the last day of school, to be fair. Like, things were a little bit chaotic and stuff. We were actually kind of transitioning into a faculty versus eighth grade basketball game that happens the last day before Christmas break and stuff. So essentially, I was a bad peer to my other teachers. They were wrangling all the students, getting them into the gym and that stuff, while I was getting to talk to an NBA shooting coach. And so I was being very, very selfish in the moment. But it's not like we were in the middle of a lecture or a test or something like that. You know, things were a little chaotic. I just wasn't being a very good teammate with my peers, you know, helping control that chaos. So,
well, I'm flattered that you consider me a big enough deal to do that, which is absolutely not the truth. But it was a fun chat, and this is really why you're here right now. So yeah, looking forward to this one.
Kind of a big deal. Apartment smells of rich mahogany, and on we go. So Bryce Simon, host of the Pistons Pulse and the Game Theory podcast, teacher, coach, and scout, husband, three kids, former Division I player. Let's, like, do a real quick dive in, like, give us the Bryce Simon biography. Let's fire it up.
Yeah. Real quick, I grew up in a little small town in the middle of nowhere, Kansas. I played JUCO for 2 years before going to American University in DC. I started there. I tore my ACL 2 games before the school's first trip to the NCAA tournament. So as you guys would know, and most of your listeners, we were in a one big bid league in the Patriot League. So semifinals of the conference tournament, playing well, the team's playing well. I tear my ACL. Team goes on, and again, for the first time in school history, makes the NCAA tournament. I end up tearing my ACL a couple more times, and I played the second half of my senior year essentially with it torn. Not essentially, with it torn. Played like 7 or 8 minutes. So if you real GM me, you'll see, like, man, why did he start 30 games as a junior and only played 15 games as a senior? That's why. I just dealt with these injuries. Eventually moved home, high school coach, all of that stuff, and then got into the media world, the Pistons Pulse podcast. And not to correct you here, Matt, I just want to make sure people, Sam Vecini is the host of the Game Theory podcast. I am just his weekly guest / co-host. So not quite as big a name there, but so I watch 82 games of the Pistons every single year, Dave. There's a lot of shooting to unpack just with that team. That could be a whole podcast as well. And then a bunch of NBA draft stuff and all of that. So that's, and then of course my family, shout out my wife who allows me to do this and enjoy it because she knows I love hoops, and my three young kids.
Amazing. I have two real quick follow-ups. I have a couple Pistons fans in my life, and I'm very sorry for you just in the moment. Some exciting pieces. Let's not dive into that too much. The second piece is one of my favorite kind of questions to ask former hoopers. Like, what's your NBA archetype? Give me like the really, it's a fun little question.
I would like to think I would be like Kyle Korver. Like that would be the, like, I don't mean to offend Kyle Korver, but I was a 3-point shooter that didn't play much defense. As I grew in my game under Coach Jones at American, who's at Old Dominion now, recently had a heart attack. So prayers up to Coach Jones. He's doing well, but on the men's, but he kind of turned me into a more all around player, tougher, physical rebounder, those type of things. I would like to think my underrated skill was my feel for the game. So I did pass the ball well, move the ball well. I just didn't have the athletic tools to really go it off the way I would have liked. But I was a shooter, I guess, is what would be my archetype.
Simmons has a thing about it's not a poor man, it's a homeless man's. And so I was like, that was my game. Also, I was a homeless man, Steve Novak, even less defense. So that's like,
got you.
That's the comp.
Like it.
Okay. So segue into the pod here today. Why did you reach out to Dave Love? Like, what was the connection there? What was the attraction there? Give us a little bit of that, and then we'll kind of roll you guys out and see how you get going.
So I had noticed something in somebody's shot, Dave, and I reached out to you and I said, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Am I crazy here? And I think one of the things that you quote unquote liked about me early on was I called you and I said, Dave, I was a Division I basketball player. My skill was 3-point shooting. I can't evaluate shooting. It is literally the worst thing I do in terms of evaluation. What can you tell me about this? And I think my question was about the guide hand, and it turned into something completely different.
Right. Yeah. It was a great conversation as far as the cause and effect of shooting, where you saw something that can be a problem. It in and of itself is not a problem, but it can cause other things that are. And so we don't want to name the player. You'd rather not name.
Correct. Yeah, I would prefer we stay away from that, but we can talk about what was with the shooting hand and then what you eventually got so
you
to with the elbow.
What you saw. And then we can kind of rehash a little bit of that conversation and then kind of take it from there if you want.
So what I had seen was the guide hand had started to tend to get to the front of the basketball. And this particular player seemed to me missing a lot short or long. As like, okay, well, maybe that guide hand is causing the energy transfer in the shot to be less. And then now he's overcompensating and, you know, those different types of things. And so I'm like, I'm going to call somebody that knows a lot more than me. And I was able to get in contact with you. And then we really hashed that out. You looked at some synergy clips and found something a little bit different with the player's elbow and kind of how he was doing that.
Yeah. And those two things are related. So you talk about the guide hands are coming on the front of the basketball. And I said, well, you know, as long as the guide hand gets out of the way, then it shouldn't be a problem. Like if the guide hand's coming off the ball, then what happens after that, it's not, the guide hand isn't affecting. But that guide hand positioning, it's not a great analogy. I need to workshop this. You guys can maybe help me with this. But I think of it as like a safety net where it allows another mistake to be made because we know we've got the guide hand there to support. So shooting hand needs to fully support the ball at around that set point position, around the forehead position. And if the guide hand gets too much on the front of the ball, the shooting hand can relax and flatten out. The wrist can flatten out so that the shooting hand's on the back of the ball. And for the people listening to this now, you can go on YouTube and watch the video of the podcast so that you can kind of see the hand motions that I'm making here and see what I'm talking about. But that guide hand positioning allows a shooting hand to relax. You can't generate arc very well when your hand's on the back of the basketball. So what most players do is they elevate their elbow at their set point. The ball goes a little bit back over top of their head, so there's hands more underneath the ball in a better position to lift, but now that causes a problem of inconsistent arc control and inconsistent distance control. So that It's like that, the domino effect of this guide hand problem. It causes the player to search for another solution to generate art. The solution that they find causes another problem, and now we're into this bog of what's the real problem, which one's causing which.
Can you talk a little bit more about what you did showed me with the elbow? Because what's funny is I went to the gym the other day with my kid, and I'm like, I'm going to try to shoot the way you were talking about, because you talked about how the elbow just being the hinge point and not really doing the full motion, and how that hinge point then causes, you know, there's just so much potential air depending when you release the ball. So I went to the gym and just started doing it on purpose to just play around with it. And I was like, oh man, like this is true. Exactly what he was telling me is what happened. So I think it was really insightful for me. So I think for your guys as listeners and viewers, they'd be insightful as well in terms of what happens when you're not doing this, you're just hinging at the elbow.
Matt, can we book Bryce again as a guest like a month from now?
100%
recurring guest.
We're going to do a social media lead up where it has to be YouTube, because we are on an audio medium mostly. And it is always one of my favorite things. Dave and I will talk about his little data project in another podcast, but we're having the conversations and we're doing the spin motions of the basketball. And he's like, I'm listening to you on the phone. I can feel you doing the motions, and I know I can't see you. So anyway, if you're out there listening, take a peek at the YouTube video. You get a feel for what they're talking about. But love that you were able to give some insight, and love that you went and tested it for yourself and found that it was great. I love that.
Yeah. So there's three joints that go into creating arc. You need to have your wrist bent back, you need to have your elbow, and you need to have your shoulder all kind of firing in sequence. When a player flattens out their wrist, they effectively remove that as a joint, and it just, the hand becomes an extension of your forearm. And now you're only left with two joints. Now, two joints can get the ball to be moving in a straight line out of the set point, which is the most important thing that we found in the research, the little data project that Matt just referred to, that from the set point, we need the ball traveling in a straight line. And when that wrist is flat, you can still get the ball traveling in a straight line, but you can't get your hand underneath the ball while it's doing it. So the elbow lifts. The elbow is now, in order to get my hand underneath, the elbow lifts so that the elbow is above the eyes already, only I haven't started my shooting motion. And then since the elbow can't really go any higher, it really becomes a pivot point around which the hand extends. And as I want the ball to be going up, so I've got to release a little bit earlier, because if I hold on to the ball a little bit longer, my hand is starting to pivot around my elbow. It's moving forward and then eventually moving down. And so that, like, the flattening, the hand can cause a wrist to flatten, which causes the elbow to lift, which causes a curving ball path. And we're in that quagmire again. And so we need that third joint so that we can get the ball traveling in a straight line, with the hand staying underneath the basketball to push it up as we do. So that whole thing, that all that just affects a player's ability to control arc and to their also control distance. Like, those two things are related. You shoot the ball higher, the ball is not going to go as far if you give it the same amount of power. If you shoot it flatter, it will go farther if you give it the same amount of power.
One of my favorite things about this conversation, and every time we kind of dive into the shooting piece, I do enjoy how granular that we are able to get. Because for me and with my team, Bryce, I kind of fit the same mold where I'm like, I was a shooter, and evaluating jump shots and changing jump shots, I'm like, you know, I was a non-shooter who had a coach turn me into a shooter through an unconventional means. But it's hard for me to do that with another player. So seeing Dave get granular, I get kind of excited, because I get ideas about the guys in my gym all the time and that kind of thing. So cool that you can kind of see and be able to use in your practice also.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I think every coach, hopefully in the country eventually, is watching and listening to this. I know, like, I'm going to be reaching. I don't send a lot of my media stuff to my friends, my coaching friends and stuff like that. They don't want to listen to the Pistons. But I'm like, this one is one that applies to a lot of the people in my life, because everybody has a kid. Everybody is coaching something, you know, like youth sports, whatever. And this stuff all applies as you're trying to teach kids how to shoot the basketball. And I'm awful at it, because I'm like, you catch it and you shoot it. And that's what I get so frustrated with my own son. Like, it just, it's simple because I've done it a million times in my life. And so it's just so hard for me to get into the details that Dave just got into.
Yeah. And I think the nice thing about my experience is that, you know, I've only ever focused on shooting. From the time I got into coaching, I just wanted to be a shooting coach. And so all of my bandwidth went to this, and the number of players I've been able to work with now, being a very old man, has given me a lot. Thank you for laughing. Cause when you laugh, it means it's not true. Only it's true. All that experience gives you multiple different solutions. And when you're a player who's trying to help somebody else, you only know the solution that worked for you.
Yes.
And that's not necessarily going to, they have a flat shot. Well, there's like 8 different ways that you can make a flat shot, or your shot can be flat. And they may have had a flat shot and they know how they corrected the problem, but that might not be the way that you're creating a flat shot.
I think as former shooters, we tend to rely on the internal cues you were talking about that leads to your annoyance when you hear things like elbow in and finish your follow through and wider hand on the ball and like all the very specific body, not useful imagery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, think about the great shooters in the game that we all love, and not all of their shots look the same. So that's what makes it even tougher. You know, like you watch one guy and it's picture perfect. Like, I think Klay Thompson has what I would consider like mechanically what people think is the prototypical clinic tape jump shot. But that doesn't mean that somebody else with a different, you know, other people bring it up way above their head, you know, and different things like that. And, you know, feet and base and the footwork to get into it, all of those different things. And if it's okay, I would like to ask, you know, one of the first questions I had was, my dad, my mom, as I grew up, I was a jump, stop, and shoot. That's how they taught me to shoot the basketball, because they are older. My parents are old and they understand that, and I love them very much, but that's, you know, they're a little old school. That's how they were taught. I naturally developed the left, right, and right, left. I call it stride step. I don't know if there's a better term for it. And then I never really got coached on it until I got to American, to be honest. So I guess one of my first questions I wanted to ask you about, Dave, was just the stride step, left, right, left, stop versus the jump stop. Where does that happen a player's development? Do you think any one of those is more age appropriate? Like, I know that's a lot to unpack, but just generally with the footwork stuff in that regard.
Okay. My answer is yes. So, and what I mean by that is, a jump stop good? Yes. Is left, right good? Yes. Is right, left good? Yes. And I think what we lose, especially when we're early on in coaching, is we learn an idea and we want to make sure that we're right, that we're not teaching detrimental things. So we're staying away from the things that are wrong and we're trying to get towards right. And then when we learn that something's right, we have the natural assumption that everything else must then be wrong. Only last I checked, if you jump stop and you shoot a 3 and it goes in, you get 3 points. And if you left right, you will also get 3 points. And you also get 3 if it's right left. Did I say left right? Anyways, you get the point.
Yeah.
So what I want is, because I remember the lens that I view this from. The lens that I view this from is, I'm working with the weaker shooters. I want my career to be built around, I help weak shooters become better shooters. I don't want to be Steph Curry shooting coach. Not that, like, nothing against that person, whomever that is. It's just not the kind of career that I want. I like the challenge of working with guys who are poor and trying to help them become below average or average or hopefully better. So that's my lens. And part of improving as a shooter is going to be, you know, comfort has to be factored in. So if they have a comfortable habit that is not the reason they're missing, I'll let them have it. I don't care. You want to jump stop and you've got the time to do it, jump stop. You want a 1-2 step left, right into it, and it, like, you've got the time to do it. Even if it's in a situation that doesn't call for that necessarily, then if you've got the time to do it, do what's going to cause the ball to give the, or have the chance to go in most often. Then, so to me, there isn't a wrong answer. I tend to start with jump stops more because the habit that is really important to me isn't in which order should our feet hit the floor. The habit that's important to me is how evenly do we push with our feet? Can we push evenly to get our center of gravity traveling straight up in the air? If you push more with one leg, you're probably pushing off of alignment and you're going to be leaning one direction or the other, creating negative energy in that direction. And so that's what I'm trying to avoid. So I'll simplify and freeze degrees of freedom for a player by having them jump stop so that both feet are working as a unit as opposed to independently. They have less things to have to self-organize. Plant your feet both at the same time. Push with your feet both at the same time. One unit. And then as they develop that habit of pushing evenly with their legs, now I'll make it harder and say, okay, I want you to 1-2 step left, right into this and see, can you, even though your feet are doing two different things at two different times, can they organize so that you can push straight up and down? Can you do it going the other? Can you do that while turning? Can you do, so that's kind of the progression that I typically go through. And the ultimate goal that I want is an even leg push versus a particular kind of footwork.
There's like two really quick NBA references that I think of immediately. And one is your rich man's version of yourself, Bryce. There's this sort of, it's not apocryphal. It's a real reported story, but it seems like it is. And there was one summer where Kyle Korver wanted to work on his shooting and went to Santa Barbara and had his force measured. And he was 48% with his right foot and 52% with his left and trying to even that out. And so even Dave, when you're talking about this, there's levels of granularity, which I think granularity is a word. There's levels of able to be granular with this that even the best shooters are able to do. But you're talking about this on a broad spectrum. And JJ Redick is the other one. Shout out to Old Man in the Three. They obviously need our plug. But like that guy had some of the best footwork in the last decade. And left, right, left, jump stop, some creative where he's scoring his shoulders at the last minute. But you see it being used effectively by those super high level shooters. But doesn't mean it's not applicable for the everyday kind of guy.
And I guess that's where my question, I guess, came more from, was like high level shooting. Like I'm watching guys, I'm scouting, I'm analyzing, I'm critiquing. You know, I'll just use Jordan Hawkins as a guy, came in last year's draft class. It's running off a ton of screens. And one thing I would always look for, because for him, we're not talking about a basic, you know, below average shooter, right? We're talking about, you know, what I thought was the best shooter in that draft class. And so when he's coming off the screen, I wanted to see him right, left. If he was coming that direction, if he was coming from the other direction, I would want to see, you know, inside foot, left, right, you know, those types of things. Because in my opinion, and what I guess I kind of been taught, was that's how you got your shot off quicker. And so I guess just to narrow it into those level of athletes, and I'm sorry if you can hear the train in the background, guys. I'm so I apologize. We obviously live really close to one. If you were looking at that level, Dave, you know, your elite level shooters, does it make more sense then to, or do you feel that you can get your shot off quicker, left, right, right, left? Or have you seen guys where it's like actually they're better just jump stopping or going left, right, no matter which direction they're going?
This is not my area of expertise. This is not what I
okay.
do real well, but I have an opinion on it. And I think there's going to be other people that might have a stronger opinion or a better opinion that I would defer to. But since it's the three of us talking right now, I'll give my opinion, which is if you're coming off a pin down, I want inside foot, outside foot. The logic for me is I want to have that step to make that decision. Am I continuing the cut? or am I planting this foot and firing up? If you jump stop and you decide you want to continue the cut, now you have to stop your or start your momentum all over again. And so I think that gives that step gives you a the quarter of a second to make your read without stopping everything. That would be the biggest thing that I factor in. And then, yeah, this is ultimately like the root of all of this that we're talking about is why I've gotten into the shot metric stuff that we won't dive into necessarily today is, but people, it's hard to figure out what really matters in shooting when the weakest shooters are doing the most fundamental things and the best shooters are doing the least fundamental things. Because let's be honest, if we only let Steph Curry shoot the fundamentally perfect shots, he'd never get a shot off. And he's so good at the stuff that is challenging that we're willing to let him play off script a little bit and shoot the less optimal shots because he shoots those better than the average person shoots their optimal. And so how do you know if a habit is detrimental to somebody when the alien of Steph Curry can get away with it? And then the guy that's a poor shooter can't even make that percentage of shots in the simple situation. So that's what the sort of the reasoning behind, God, we got to start to measure how people shoot the basketball and start to figure out what truly matters in shooting so that we're not just giving this anecdotal evidence of, well, JJ Redick comes off a pin down and he kicks his foot out in front of him. And he's a great shooter. So that doesn't, if you do that, you're either going to become great or it's not going to be holding you back. Well, no, I believe it does hold you back. It changes the spin of the, changes other parts of your shot and in a less advantageous way. So that's why I've started to measure how people shoot the basketball.
Hey basketball fans, Coach Dave Love here with an exclusive offer just for you, my personalized video shot analysis. Imagine having an NBA shooting coach analyze your shooting form, just like I do for the pros. That's exactly what you'll get with my video shot analysis. Here's how it works. You send me a video of your shot and I'll break it down frame by frame. I'll pinpoint your strengths and identify the areas of improvement and give you tailored advice to take your shot to the next level. You'll receive a comprehensive analysis designed just for you. Whether you're a beginner or an aspiring pro, my feedback will help you shoot with confidence and precision. It isn't just feedback, it's a game changer. With my video shot analysis, you're not just practicing, you're evolving, and every single shot counts. Ready to transform your game? Visit coachdavelove.com/store to learn more and get started. That's coachdavelove.com/store and look for video shot analysis.
Well, and you brought him up again, Matt. You brought, whenever you said JJ Redick, it like clicked with me because like that was somebody I watched to try to improve or grow the way I made shots. I got tired of just catching and shooting. And now you see this dude running off crazy amount of screens at Duke and doing exactly what you said, Dave, in terms of he's flipping it, you know, he's turning his hips and he's kicking his legs out and his shoulders don't even get turned until the last second. So I go to the gym and I start practicing that stuff, you know, and I grew up, I didn't even know what AAU was when I grew up. I definitely didn't have a personal trainer. I legit went to the gym on my own and it was my sanctuary. I loved it. I mean, it's where I love to be every single day, but it was just me, the basketball in the gym, no trainers, nobody else. And I watched what other, you know, dudes did on NBA and dudes did in college basketball. And I tried to go replicate it, but Matt, I'm glad you brought up JJ because yeah, I mean, but to your point, Dave, there's a lot of issues with turning your hips like that for a lot of people or not getting your shoulders square. So it's just, there's so many nuances to this. I just love it so much.
And how we practice should be determined by what causes us problems. And so what causes JJ Redick to have problems or players of that caliber are much more challenging than what causes a weaker shooter problems. And so they should be practicing in very different environments. So the way that you're sort of describing practice and the way that JJ Redick is solving problems is along the lines of an idea in skill acquisition called differential learning. Like, explore the edges of the sandbox. Don't try to execute perfect form every single time. Actually explore the outer edges so that you know where the outer edges are. JJ Redick should be practicing a lot like that, creating a whole bunch of problems for him and teaching his body how to figure it out, because it's the normal problems for the average player aren't difficult for him. Whereas a player who really struggles to make the shot, we may need to make sure that they stay in the middle, get them in the correct middle of the sandbox, because they think they're standing in the middle of the sandbox and they're actually in the corner with no wiggle room. And so, we got to reorganize that and practice in a very different way than the elite shooter needs to practice.
I'm still new to the skill acquisition kind of research that you're talking about. So basically the concept of what you're talking about is associated with challenge points. So no challenge point is middle of the sandbox, or somebody can be in the corner of the sandbox by pushing the challenge point too far. Can you give me a little bit more on that, a little more practical?
Yeah. The challenge point is a point in which learning is maximized. Where if the situation that you're practicing in is so simple, then it's going to be very difficult to transfer to it the complex environment of a game. But if it's too hard, then you're not going to be changing your habit or your motor pattern. And the sweet spot is easy enough to change the motor pattern, but hard enough to start to resemble a game. And that's where we should be searching for like the level of practice. And obviously JJ Redick and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and these guys are good at the skill. We need to be challenging them a lot. And the weaker shooter is struggling with just the fundamentals of the skill, that their solution that they found doesn't work. And so their challenge point needs to be a lot lower in the beginning and then increasing as they get more capable.
That's awesome. Thanks, Dave. Let's take a super quick break and we're gonna come back with another one of Bryce's questions.
Hey there, basketball fans. I'm NBA shooting coach Dave Love, and I've got exciting news just for you. Introducing my exclusive free basketball shooting newsletter. It's packed with insights and techniques straight from the hardwood. Have you ever wondered how NBA players improve their shots? Or how you could get to the next level, whether you're a college player, a coach, or a budding youth player? My newsletter brings all this and more directly to your inbox. Each edition is a deep dive into the world of basketball shooting. I'll share some of the tips and ideas that I use with my NBA clients, tailored for every level of the game. But wait, there's more. Subscribers receive exclusive monthly discounts on my online products. From training videos to personalized coaching sessions, you'll get it all for a fraction of the price. And the best part of all, it's absolutely free to join. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your game and join a community of passionate players and coaches from around the globe. Signing up is easy. Just visit CoachDaveLove.com.
Welcome back to the Coach Dave Love podcast. Bryce has sent us a couple of questions kind of in the lead up here. Bryce, why don't you dive into a few of those? I feel like those are kind of fun.
Yeah. So just looking at scouting in general, and I'm a little new to this world, to be honest with you. Again, I got into the content creation and it was just talking about the Pistons and stuff. And then I got into NBA draft and now I'm very deep into scouting, analyzing, critiquing, projecting, all of that type of stuff. One thing that was really interesting to me when I got into this world, especially NBA draft, was the idea of free throw percentage being a better indicator of specifically a college basketball player's three-point shooting projection as opposed to their actual three-point percentages. I know there's been studies on it, articles, deep dives, all of that. I'm fascinated to know where you stand on that type of thing in terms of the three-point percentage versus free throw percentage in projecting what a player can be as a shooter.
I haven't done a ton of research into it, but I agree with the idea. And so this was something I sort of became aware of probably about 7 or 8 years ago with one of the teams I worked for and talking with a couple of the front office and analytics people. And they sort of mentioned this idea. And I'm like, oh, okay. And looking at a couple of guys, the small sample size one, that sort of makes sense. And then taking a further step back, when I'm asked to evaluate somebody, where I start is the free throw line. Like I watch their free throws until I have a sense. I don't want to see necessarily what I don't want to see the habit that a defender forced. I want to see what they do when they have control over the environment. Do they have mechanics that are working for them, or do they have mechanics that are working against them? And once I have a handle of, okay, how simple is their shooting motion? How repeatable is that? Then I'll go to the 3-point line and see like, okay, how much does what they do at the 3-point line resemble the free throw line, starting with open catch and shoot threes? And then how do they adjust to more contested, more moving? And so I like the idea, and it sort of follows, not that I do a ton of evaluation stuff right now, but it sort of follows my process on evaluating what does a player need to be working on here.
And I think another one of the points with that was, or that when I hear, because I haven't done any research, like I want to be like adamant and clear about that. This is something I'm just taking from what others have told me. As I said, one of the worst things I do whenever I scout players is the shooting. Like, you want to talk about defensive rotations. If a guy rotates and gets a box out on the weak side, I can tell you about that stuff all day long. That's what I love. You know, shooting relocation actually is one of my favorite things. I may say hammer to the corner, or watch for a hammer to the corner more than anything during a basketball game. But I think one of the ideas is it shows the shooting touch, right? So do you subscribe to that, just in terms of the touch a player has and how important that is with their shooting form, just being able to evaluate the free throw percentage?
Yeah. Ultimately, if a guy can't stand stationary at a moderate distance with nobody trying to stop him and repeat a motion, then it's not going to get better when the situation gets harder. So yeah, that's it. Like, if you can't control your distance in that environment, I'm not betting on you to be able to control your distance in a harder environment. My mentor had a great line. I've forgotten about it, so I might not get it totally right on the first telling. But if it's if you think you're a good 3-point shooter and a below average free throw shooter, you're not a good 3-point shooter. Like,
you put us 20 seconds on those guys. I was going to bring that up.
So like, hey, if you can't do it when nobody's trying to stop you, why am I going to trust you to do it when people are? So.
Well, and the idea, right, is the 3-point line is about to get longer for these guys. So let alone the defensive contests and closeouts and all of that, it just naturally they're going to be shooting from further away. I didn't necessarily have this in the outline, but I did have other indicators as a question I wanted to ask. What is there something you've noticed that gives, let's say we have a good free throw shooter in college, Dave, a guy that shoots it well from three from the college line. What may give that player issues translating to the NBA line? I'll give you an example of someone I've watched every second of their game. Cade Cunningham was a really good college 3-point shooter, really good free throw shooter at Oklahoma State. He has struggled a little bit in the NBA. Now, he's had some injury things and stuff like that. I'm not asking you to talk specifically to Cade, but what could be some cause for somebody like that who seems to be a good shooter with good form, but may have struggled a little bit transitioning to the longer 3-point line?
A big one is balance. That because balance and time kind of fit together. And so if you can be in a less balanced position and get stable as long as you have time. So, for example, your feet can be narrow, and you can still be balanced if you have an extra half second to organize your body. But if you've got to do that quickly and your feet are narrow, then going to be a lot harder. So that'll be one of the things I look for. And then like things like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, a lift point that causes a curving ball or a set point that causes a curving ball path. It just having to back out another couple of feet, and people that struggle with a curving ball path also struggle with their distance control. So the further out you get, the harder it is to control the distance on it. Like those are some of the things that I look for. And then as simple as, can you get the middle of the hand underneath the middle of the ball? Like old Lonzo Ball in college with the ball way over on the left side of his head. I think he was a 42% college 3-point shooter. And then he got to the NBA and I don't think it was above mid 20s. And so that added 2 feet and the smaller window. We might have to pause. We got to do
the over under was 27 minutes.
At what point in the podcast would Matt's cat make the first and it just did. So that's amazing.
A bit of an attention grabber. Apologies. Go ahead, Dave.
Lonzo gets into college into the NBA where the line is now 2 feet further behind, and the windows that he has to shoot through get smaller and smaller, and he has to synchronize a complicated movement pattern in less time. And it's just like, I can bench press 175 pounds. I can't bench press 180. Like it's so small. Like why couldn't you do it? Because 175 is my maximum. And like he could synchronize in this environment, and the maximum speed at the college level was a 98% of 100. Well, in the NBA, it got to 100, and that was just a little bit too much for him. And he had to simplify him again.
That's fascinating. It makes so much sense. You know, because I do, one thing I do always see is, you know, players that have close base and wide base. So I think two of the easiest examples from recent class, Taylor Hendricks is a guy that a lot of people talked about having a narrow base on his shot. And then Adrian Griffin Jr. for the Hawks had a very wide base, you know, that played at Duke. And so I was like, I wondered about some of those things, but what you talked about there, where that narrow base and getting on balance you can do, but when you're sped up, your body doesn't have as much time to get there. That's really interesting. Cause I always just thought with the base thing, like a narrow base, okay, this is only going to mess him up on movement shooting, right? Like when he's on the move, this is going to make him more off balance. Or even Adrian Griffin Jr., it was going to be only on the move was this wide base going to really cause him issues. But whatever those issues could be from the base are just sped up because they don't have as much time to compensate or balance themselves out. So I hope did I catch all that right? Like I'm more talking myself through this on this one to make sure I caught it right.
You and all of these things are a trade-off. Like a narrow base will be more powerful, but is less stable. A wide base will be more stable, but less powerful. And the sweets there, everything in between is the sweet spot. And as a coach, it's our job to figure out, well, which advantage do they need more of? Do they need to become stronger? Then maybe I allow a little bit narrower, but I have to be aware that they're not going to be able to shoot off the move as well. And okay, do I need to be more stable? Now I need may need to be a little bit wider, but we have to be aware that there's going to be additional power needed. And so all of these things in shooting, there's a trade-off where, you know, both sides of the spectrum have an advantage. Which advantage does that particular player need? And then like you talked about, didn't realize that balance would be an effect at the like in simple non-moving stationary situations. There are guys who have bad balance at the free throw line, that they have a narrow base and they'll just happen to bring the ball back over top of their head. And because they're long, and your head and the basketball are reasonably heavy, if you've got a narrow base, bring the ball back behind your head, leaning your head back, can just be enough to kind of pull some people off balance, while other people go like, yeah, my base is narrow, but it's a free throw. I can control it. And okay, you can. That doesn't mean everybody can. Doesn't mean he can't. He obviously can't.
Hey there, basketball fans. Coach Dave Love here with an exciting opportunity to revolutionize your shooting game. Introducing my exclusive shot development systems, Pure Release, Consistency and Balance, and Fluidity and Arc. Each system is designed to target key aspects of your shooting technique, transforming you into a more effective player on the court. Pure Release focuses on perfecting your shot release. Consistency and Balance enhances your stability and accuracy, and Fluidity and Arc works on your ball path and trajectory of your shot. Find out the drills and progressions that I use with my NBA players to improve these important habits. Can't decide which one to choose? No worries, grab the bundle and get all three systems at a fantastic value. It's a complete package to elevate every part of your shooting game. And there's a special deal for all my podcast listeners. Use the promo code PODCAST20 at checkout to save 20% on any of the shot development systems. Don't miss this chance to train like the pros. Visit coachdavelove.com/store and take your first step towards shooting success. That's coachdavelove.com/store.
The next question I had, and I'm always fascinated by this because as someone that, you know, puts my evaluations out in the public sphere, I'm always like, what do NBA people think? So I'm going, you know, I just said earlier, I thought Jordan Hawkins was the best shooter in the class. And then Grady Dick was second last year. And I'm like, I wonder what Dave Love thinks about that. Does he think I'm an idiot for thinking those guys are, you know, elite shooters in that way? What do you, I know this isn't what you necessarily do, but are there things that you do feel like evaluators, scouts, like myself in the media sphere, or even within organizations? Let's start positive. Are there things they're doing a really good job in terms of evaluating these guys? Or maybe what do they come to you as the shooting coach and say, Dave, what do we really need to look for with this guy? Are there any specific things like that that you could key on for us?
I think the next 5 years or 10 years of shooting development is going to be critical I feel like Matt and I have talked about this a few times off the podcast and on it, where we are kind of in the realm where, you know, the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt,
one of my favorites.
Basketball,
adapt or die, Dave. Adapt or die.
Yeah, and basketball shooting development is really the scene with the scouts talking about the ugly girlfriend and the has bad posture.
Oh yeah, yeah, yep.
We're kind of all just making up what we think is important because it's just so hard to evaluate. And I hear some things that scouts will talk about, like things that they think are really important, and that it may be for the elite guy, but they're applying it to the guy that struggles or vice versa. I think there's going to be tremendous growth that happens in the next 10 years as far as actually understanding what matters in shooting the basketball. It really just is simple physics in a really, really complicated situation. And I think there's a poor understanding of the actual physics that go into shooting. So I know I didn't really answer your question. I'm a
no, you did.
I want to turn it around on you for a second. Like, I'm not in a position to evaluate very often. That's not what's necessary for my job. And then my knowledge of the game outside of shooting isn't as high as a lot of other people's by design. But I'm astonished by people where, how can you determine that this guy who's projected to pick 13th be picked 13th is better than this guy who's projected to be picked 14th or 5th? Like, how do you do that?
Well, we're wrong a lot, first off, and we are made feel better by that, where NBA teams that make a lot of money to do this are wrong a lot as well. So that's how I justify that I can be wrong, is just go look at the lottery from essentially every draft. Like, I was looking at the 2013 draft a little bit ago, just go through some of the names in that draft, and it's like, you know, there's so much projection. There's so, just like shooting, guys, there's so many different things that go into it. People will make fun of this, but it's a real thing. Age determines things, right? There's a difference between 18-year-old Ron Holland playing against G League guys every night and some 24-year-old college kid who's in his sixth year in college basketball. There is a difference there. I'm sorry, there is. And that stuff, that context matters. With the guy that's playing overseas, you know, Nikola Topic, to give you a name, just got called up to the Euro League. Like, he's playing against better competition than anybody right now. So you have to mix all of those different things, all of the different leagues, all the different ages. And I think one thing I really need to improve is I got to get more in the mind of NBA teams. What are NBA teams specifically looking for? Because I may think this kid's really good. I may think he can really do this, this, and this. But if that's not valuable to what an NBA team wants to do, it really doesn't matter what I think about him as a player. So that's important context in all of this as well.
Bryce, what I have the three different things that, like, my three shooting non-negotiables. Like, I need you to be as unbalanced as possible. I need you to get the middle of the hand underneath the middle of the ball. I need you to create a lifting motion. Those are my non-negotiable. What would be like the three things, or I'll let you have five if you want, that, like, what do you look for the most when you're evaluating somebody? Or is it completely different for everybody? You're seeing somebody for the first time.
Yeah, there is a lot of difference because players are so different. Let's go, like, if I'm looking for an elite level player, right? Because when you get later in the draft, the nuance of what you're looking for changes. So I want to see a good feel for the game. I think one thing I want to write in a scout on a player is he's just flat out good at basketball. I want to be able to, and this is complete, like, non-analytics. This is completely subjective. It's just like, I want to be able to say this guy understands the game. He knows the game. Maybe I can tell he's picking up on scouting report things, or he knows the scheme. So that's one thing. One thing that makes me feel a lot better inside when I'm evaluating a player is if I can pick out an elite skill, whether that's shooting, he can really get to the lane, he can operate ball screens. Maybe it's something defensively. Ryan Dunn at Virginia is getting a lot of love right now, and it's not because of any of his offensive stuff. It's because this dude is elite defensively, what he does playmaking wise and just the amount of positions he can guard. Yes, Matt.
Do you think that's the most translatable thing for you to see? Like, just super quick preamble. I did a lot of scouting when I was coaching the Canadian Professional League, but it's all guys that were playing overseas or playing other professional basketball. And, it, like you said, establishing context is important. Different translatable skills. For you, looking at college versus the NBA, what's, like, the couple most translatable things that you see there that immediately, yep, going to have an impact in the NBA? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think one of the easiest ones, and I don't know, like, this is something I need to get a feel for is rebounding. I feel like rebounding guys are able to translate that, but it's how much do NBA teams value that? And so I think what would really translate is, like, an offensive rebounder. Now, there's caveats to that, right? Like, I could give you some names. I'm not going to right now, but for different reasons of guys who maybe the athleticism doesn't translate, and therefore the rebounding is not going to translate as much, but the feel for those things may translate to other areas. So that's where it comes in as well of, okay, a lot of people use steal rate and block rate for good defenders. And I used to hate that. I'm like, no, that just means they take lots of chances. But for a lot of people, steal rate is feel for the game, awareness, anticipation, which translate to every aspect, including offensively. Because if you have a good feel for the game defensively, hopefully that means if you're an off-ball player offensively, you're going to know when to cut, because you'll see your man turn his head and, you know, those different things. So it's really trying to combine all of those different things, you know, and I wish I could give you another thing. Like, I want to say athleticism, but the thing is, there's guys where the athleticism can look really good at one level, but then it doesn't translate. I use myself as an example all the time. I used to, in high school, I was a good athlete for where I went to high school. If you put me on a track and field, I would not stand out in any way whatsoever. No way whatsoever. I wouldn't have won the high jump. I wouldn't have won the 400. I wouldn't have won the mile. When I stepped on a basketball floor, and I hate to say it because it's going to sound arrogant, I look like the most athletic basketball player. I move like a basketball player. I could dunk on people because my jumping translated to areas with other people around me, taking contact, those type of things. You know how many dudes can do, you guys have both seen this, guys that can do crazy stuff jumping, and then they get in games and it doesn't translate because they just don't have the same body control, spatial awareness, those type of things. So sorry for rambling on there, Dave. I know you had something to add too, but yeah, I just wanted to touch on that real quick.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with your last comment. There guys that like name a dunk and they can do it when the gym is empty, but then stand underneath the rim and like they're just not conditioned to being low and wide. And so they're just constantly being bodied. And can't control finish around the rim. Never mind it. Like their athleticism is completely wasted because it's maximized in one way, but not in a game kind of a way. Bryce, this has been a lot of fun. Will you come back?
Oh yeah, anytime.
Yeah, this has been great. And so what we try and do is we try and like leave with like a tangible takeaway. What has been your takeaway from this?
I mean, I feel like one thing is there's just so many different ways for someone to shoot. So I apply a lot of this. I literally told someone the other day, because I'm into youth sports now, right? Because my own kids and, you know, debating how much do they need to play and these travel teams and all that. And I've kind of swung and my kid's not playing travel team till he gets older and all of that. So I think about it from that perspective. And I legit told someone, I think my mother-in-law, I said, I met an NBA shooting coach the other day. Like if my kid needs training, like I'm calling this guy and sorry, I don't expect you to answer that phone call, Dave. I get it. I'm not going to put that on our friendship, our relationship, but it's like, I need to be a little more patient with him and let him grow and learn his way of shooting and not try to micromanage every single thing. And one of the biggest things was the sandbox you were talking about, because I have specific examples from my own training where I explored the sandbox, met my limitation, stepped back, and then went back to it whenever I got a little bit older, a little bit stronger. I think about my step back jump shot and the progression that took of first time I tried it, unsuccessful. Okay, I'll come back to it a month from now. Okay, now it's successful, not ready for a game. Now, can I do it going to my right? Because stepping back, pushing off my left foot was harder than pushing off my right foot. And it was just like, fail. Nope. Bring it back a little bit. And it's like, I had to do that on my own, though. I can't do that with my son every step of the way. He has to learn some of those things as well. So I think my biggest tangible takeaway is kind of how I'm going to work with my own children throughout this process.
That's great. Yeah. Matt's right there.
No, I was just going to start wrapping up, but I was going to say, Bryce, you're going to have literally dozens of people going to check out the YouTube videos for those step back shots, right? Dozens.
No, they are. That was before YouTube. Here's the fun. My 9-year-old literally asked me the other day if I even played basketball in high school. He didn't, because we don't talk. My wife actually was a college hooper as well. She played college basketball. We don't really talk about it, obviously. And then my students, I got so frustrated. I went complete jerk, like not jerk, but I was like, I was that guy. Like, no, you guys need to know how good I was type of thing. Cause they were trying to cook me the other day. And so I pulled up my box score. I scored 18 on Maryland when I was at American and we upset them right before Christmas. I'm complete just bogus move. I pull up the box score. I said, no, you guys are going to come look at this. You're like, put some respect on my name. Like, I'm such an idiot. I'm a 36-year-old grown man doing this to my middle school students. But yeah, because there's no YouTube tape. They asked me, can you dunk? Yes, I can dunk. Well, where's it at? I don't know, on a VHS somewhere, and we don't have a VHS player in this town, so I can't show it to you.
I love it. That makes me so happy.
Fellas, this has been the best. We're like well over an hour now, but I feel like there's a lot more meat on this bone. So Real quick, Bryce Simon, you're an absolute delight. Where can the people find you?
Yeah. So at Motor City Hoops on Twitter. Again, don't follow my personal account. Don't tweet much there. But, you know, at Motor City Hoops, the Pistons Pulse, if you want to listen to Pistons content for whatever reason. And then the Game Theory Podcast with Sam Vecenie. We talk general NBA, NBA draft, all of that stuff. I would assume that's a little bit more everybody's appetite that's also listening to your guys's pod. Guys, I will literally come back anytime. I enjoyed this so much. I'm excited to grow relationships, friendships, and, you know, professionally and personally, you know, and hopefully meet you guys in person, because a handshake and a look in the eyes always kind of solidifies things. So hopefully at some point we can find a way to do that as well.
Can't wait.
Freaking love that. You can find the Coach Dave Love podcast wherever you're listening to it now, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Subscribe wherever you are. If you made it all the way through, we appreciate you listening. Once again, if anything from this episode was valuable to you as a coach or a scout or a teacher or whatever realm of the hoops that you're coming at this from, please let us know. Coach Dave, where can they find you to give that feedback?
Coach Dave Love on Twitter, Instagram, the web. Like, just type in Coach Dave Love and you'll find me pretty quickly.
Find him on the general internet. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Coach Dave Love Podcast. To stay up to date with our future episodes, please remember to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to sign up for Coach Love's free shooting newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com, and be sure to follow him on social media. You can find him at Coach Dave Love.